Bhaktivedanta Swami. So we're on text 20. So this is the section, fourth section of chapter 13, called Prakriti Purusha and Their Union. This is from verse 20 to 26. Somebody has the surrender unto me here? What is the name of the previous title they had? He has that? So Krishna has described Jnanam and Gaya, and the Gaya is the soul and the super soul. So now Krishna explains the Purusha, which is again the soul and the super soul, in terms of their connection with Prakriti. But main emphasis here is on the Jiva, because he becomes bound by the Prakriti. This mosquitoes didn't. That was 3 days ago. It's still amazing, eh? Creatures are horrible creatures. Huh? Yeah. We have our coil, electric coil. Okay. They particularly like foreigners somehow or other. What to do? Prakritim purusham chaiva didyanari ubhavapi vikaramstra gunamstra eva vidi prakriti sambhavan. Material nature and the living entities should be understood to be beginningless. Their transformations and the modes of matter are products of material nature. So you'll notice that Krishna, he begins each section with the actual words that he's describing here, Prakriti and Purusha. And in the previous section he said Gyayam first, right? So it's very clear what he's talking about. And then verse 19, Prabhupada describes that section, those sections which were given by Vishnu Chakravarti in his Tika also. So there we actually, a lot of times we have the sections which are already described. And then if you look in the Sanskrit you can see there's confirmation of these sections. So Krishna's talking about answering Arjuna's first two questions now. He goes back. And we can understand a little bit why he does that. Because Kshatriya and Kshatriya is kind of simple, but Prakriti and Purusha includes the Purusha, how he gets entangled in the Prakriti. And he also describes how he becomes untangled from the Prakriti. And he describes a little bit about the psychological reasons, or you could say psycho-spiritual reasons why he becomes entangled. So it's a little bit more complicated than just Kshatriya and Kshatriya, which was just the body and the soul. Because now you're talking about like, you know, the living entity getting entangled in the material realm. And then you have a little history there, and then you have the Lord, you know, the fact that he's averse to the Lord, and then the fact that he wants to enjoy the Prakriti, and the fact that he thinks he's an enjoyer, and his false ego, and, there's all of these things which are added now. So that's why Krishna kept this for the end. So the first thing he says is that Prakriti Purusham Chaiva Vidyanadi Ubhavapi, that you should understand that Prakriti and Purusha are both anadi, beginningless. They're both Krishna's shaktis, right, or his visheshanas. So they're both beginningless. Well, we understand that the jiva is beginningless, but usually we have this idea that the prakriti is temporary and not eternal. But actually it's Krishna's energy also, and it's eternal. It's just that it's always transforming, whereas the jiva is not transforming. So the material energy is just in a constant flux, right? Bhutva, bhutva, pralita. It's coming and going, in and out of Mahavishnu. And so we have this idea that it's, you know, but, you know, that it, maybe it's not eternal. We have this understanding sometimes. But actually it's Krishna's energy. Scientists, you know, they also accept this conservation of energy theory. Right? So even the secular, you know, scholars, they understand that the material energy is not destroyed, that it's eternal. The physicists, Newtonian physicists. But then the second part of the verse says, Vikarangscha Ganangschaiva Vidi Prakriti Sambhavan. Now he distinguishes the difference between the two. The first part of the verse describes how they're the same, and the second part of the verse describes how they're different. And he says that anytime you see any transformations or any modes of nature, then that is to be only on the, coming from the Prakriti. It's not coming from the jiva, the Purusha, or the Purusha Supersoul, you could say. And so. All right, let's see what Prabhupada says here. Actually, his commentary is the same as Bhaktivinoda Thakur's here. We'll notice Prabhupada's commentaries here in this section are like classic vintage commentaries, the kind of commentaries that when you read them, you know, it just puts you into another world. And if people who are not devotees read them, it makes them into devotees. So what you can do is you can just copy these and put it on a pamphlet and just give them out. This section is very, very potent. You can make a lot of devotees like that. Listen to this commentary. Both material nature and the living entity are eternal. That is to say that they existed before the creation. The material manifestation is from the energy of the Supreme Lord, and so also are the living entities, but the living entities are of the superior energy. Both the living entities and material nature existed before this cosmos was manifested. Material nature was absorbed in the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Mahavishnu, when it was required, it was manifested by the agency of Mahatattva. Similarly, the living entities are also in him, and because they are conditioned, they are averse to serving the Supreme Lord. Thus, they are not allowed to enter into the spiritual sky. But with the coming forth of material nature, the least living entities are again given a chance to act in the material world and prepare themselves to enter into the spiritual world. Bhaktivinoda Thakur used the terms as Vimukha? Bada jiva? Huh? Vimukha. Turn his face away from the Lord. Bahirmukha, that's right. Yeah, Bahirmukha. Bahirmukha jiva, bada jiva, that's the term. Yes. Huh? Benefit? No, it means he turned his face away outside. Bahirmukha. Thus, but with the coming forth of material nature, these living entities are again given a chance to act in the material world and prepare themselves to enter into the spiritual world. That is the mystery of this material creation. Actually, now here's the important part. Actually, the living entity is originally the spiritual part and parcel of the Supreme Lord, but due to his rebellious nature, he is conditioned within material nature. It really does not matter how these living entities or superior entities of the Lord have come into contact with material nature. The Supreme Personality of Godhead knows, however, how and why this actually took place. So it doesn't matter to us, but it's known to him. So that means that, you know, it's not really known to us. It's not accessible to us. In the scriptures, the Lord says that those attracted by this material nature are undergoing a hard struggle for existence. But we should know it with certainty from the description of these few verses that, okay, so now he's described that all transformations and influences of material nature by the three modes are also productions of material nature. All transformations and variety in respect to living entities are due to the body. As far as spirit is concerned, living entities are all the same. Right? Prabhupada said in the class, we're all property, but we're trying to be Purusha. That is illusion. Our bodies are created the material ingredients, the 24 elements, and we're trying to enjoy property. Our real business is not to enjoy, but to help Krishna enjoy. That's bhakti, anukulyena krishnanu, just like the residents of Vrindavan. They're trying to help Krishna to enjoy. So that's the main difference. And Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur wrote, after explaining this, Paramatma, the Lord now explains the Jivatma, who is also Kshatragya. Why did the relation between the Kshatragya and Prakriti occur, and when did it start? Expecting this question, Krishna answers, Prakriti and Purusha are both without beginning. I'm without beginning, and they are my energy, so they're also without a beginning. So, from these verses, first three verses, it's clear that it's talking about just the jiva, and particularly Bahir Mukh Bhava Jiva. But then, the super soul is described as the supreme Purusha, or the other Purusha. So he's also there, but there's a definite separation from this description now and his description later. Okay. So these are real sutras, and they are expounded upon later in the Gita. Karya karana kartritve hetu prakritir uchate purusha sukadhukanam bhuktitve hetu uchate. Nature is said to be the cause of all material causes and effects, whereas the living entity is the cause of the various sufferings and enjoyments in this world. So, here's the relationship between the jiva and the changes caused by material nature. Well, we have this verse is two things here. You'll see.
These are the hetu of these things. That's what the verse says. Kaya karate, hetu property uchate. Volume. Property is the hetu, the cause of these things. Of course, it is said uchate. And then purusha is the cause of bokatve, which includes sukha and dukkha. Right? Enjoyment.
So, yeah. Okay, give me that again. I just need to look at my notes a little bit. So, karya means the effect.
This means the cause, karana. And prakriti means the agent. Doer. What did I do? So we have cause, effect, and agent. And so these are also understood to be sense.
So, this is also considered to be the body, the senses, and the devas. So Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur comments, although karya, karana, kartritva, and bokritva are the characteristics of prakriti, prakriti predominates over the first three because she herself is predominated by jada, or inertness. And due to his conscious nature, the Purusha, the Jiva, predominates over Bhoktritva, the experience of happiness and stress. And he explains that something is named according to its predominant aspects. According to this logic, Prakriti is the cause of Karya, Karana, and Kartritva, and Purusha is the cause of Bhoktritva. So the Prabhupada's translation says, nature is said to be the cause of cause and effect. So you can also translate it, nature is said to be the instrument or medium of cause and effect. Whereas the living entity is the cause of the various sufferings and enjoyments in the world. medium or instrument. Anyway, Vishwanath Chakravarti described why she considers, it's why it's said that she's considered to be dominate the first three, even though they're all considered characteristics of Prakriti, because it's inert. But the living entity is the Purusha, has his conscious nature. So therefore he's considered to be the predominator over enjoyment. So we take our own responsibility and we predominate over, you know, our enjoyment, our sukha and dukkha. That is, we're making choices and we're acting on our desire and we get reactions to that. And that's felt by the Bodhijiva as sukha and dukkha on the mental plane. I mean, it's factually all illusory because the living entity is asango yam purusha, right? He's actually detached from the material world. But because he strongly identifies with the body, which includes the subtle body, or it's necessary to misidentify with the subtle body in order to misidentify with the gross body. So we want to enjoy the senses of the body, so therefore we misidentify with the whole package. And so when the sukha and dukkha is given to us by the Prakriti according to our karma, according to our action and reaction, therefore in the mind it creates this happiness and distress. So the Bodhijiva is, kind of going on the roller coaster of sukha and dukkha. And he's going up, he's, oh, it's happy, and then he's going down. It's like, we said this, icha, dvesha, or sukha and dukkha. These are the transformations of the mental, the mind, of the chakra. So, so Krishna is explaining the effect of combining the jiva in the Prakriti. Now he's describing Prakriti and Purusha, they're both eternal. But when you see transformations and when you see gunas, then you know that comes from the Prakriti only. Because the living entity is, unchangeable, immovable, and eternally the same. Akledyo yam, adhayo yam, ashoshya evacha, all of these things, not cleavable and so forth. When the living entity becomes Prakriti Stani, his acts cause results produced by Prakriti. Right? As the enjoyer, he misidentifies with the body. And this misidentification causes him to own the sukha and dukkha. So it's like, we create a prison for ourselves and then complain that we're in the prison. We want to enjoy and we come to the material energy. And then we have to take the reactions, and that's sukha and dukkha. And then we complain about that. But when the living entity is placed into the material nature, into the Prakriti, then whatever he does is going to be of the Prakriti. Just like if, we throw you into a swimming pool or a lake, whatever you do after that will be wet. Isn't it? Or sometimes the salt mine examples. Right? Everything tastes salty in the material world because it's all salt. So the living entity is thrown into this swimming pool, and you know, whatever he does, he moves his arm a little bit this way, and then there's ripples, and then there's counter ripples that come back. And he moves his leg a little bit this way, and cause ripples, and then there's ripples that come back. But everything he does is of the Prakriti. So Prakriti is like the instrument of cause and effect in this world. In this way, he becomes the doer and the enjoyer. And the enjoyment of sukha and dukkha becomes his as the doer. He takes on the doership and he's moving and acting in the material energy. And so therefore, Prakriti becomes the hetu of cause and effect. And the reason why he's moving is because bhoktritva, he wants to enjoy. So ultimately the sukha and dukkha, he's the cause of it. But the instrument or the means is the Prakriti, because he's situated in the Prakriti. And his very body is also predominated by Prakriti. His body and his senses, right? He's just desiring to enjoy, but he's got this body and senses, and he's surrounded by Prakriti with all of these. Everything that he does is. So and these kind of endlessly reverberate back and forth, and it gets like where it's lost. So cause and effect is nature is the instrument for cause and effect. Prakriti, or the medium of his existence in the material realm. Because otherwise you have this statement that Prakriti is the cause of the cause, which doesn't make sense. So you can understand it in such a way. She's the cause of she's the instrument of all cause and effect that's happening in this world. She's the medium of all cause and effect, because she's the swimming pool. Prakriti is the swimming pool. So when we throw you in the swimming pool, everything you're going to do is wet, whatever it is, any action. It has to be. Therefore, the swimming pool is the instrument of anything that happens. So it could be called the cause of cause and effect in that way. Prabhupada talks about the living entity being put in different kinds of bodies, a hog, a dog, and he's limited by those bodies. Right, that's another kind of pool or body. Well, yeah, you throw in a dog in the pool and whatever he does is wet also. But he's limited, more limited than the human being. He can only do one stroke. And the living being can do all different kinds of, you know, swimming. And the dog does. And it's limited. Okay, next verse. Question? Yes. Yeah.
When we say it is a cause, then it indicates it being the doer. Whereas from the example of the swimming pool,
but then you have a contradiction of terms. Because here we have doer, kartvitva means doer. Here we have karana, which means cause. Because hetu, I mean, in the dictionary, it does have different meanings. I mean, I know in your language, I guess it just means cause in Hindi. But in Sanskrit, it can have different meanings. But that's why I'm explaining it in this way. Because otherwise you say the cause of the cause and cause of the doership, doer of the doer, you know, it doesn't make sense. Yeah. That's how I'm explaining it. We empower it because we are Bahir Mukh, and then we want to enjoy, and you know, the material energy, which is explained in the next verse more clearly, you know, why we go there and what happens more in more detail in the next verse. Yeah, devas, the body and the senses. According to Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur, he gives this explanation. So, I just added that, and I mean, there's different connotations, or, you know, commentaries and angles of vision on the words. But, yeah, I mean, it makes sense that the devas are the agents. Yeah, and they control the body and senses. And we're inside the body and kind of helpless. And the only thing we're doing is desiring to enjoy. Right. And we make some choices about how we're going to enjoy. Either according to the Shastra or not according to the Shastra. And if we, not according to the Shastra, different degrees of, you know, proximity from, further and further away from the Shastra. different depths of vikarma, you know. And then we have some reaction. Because it's his kshetra, which is being is transforming. That's the prakriti. But he's misidentifying with that subtle body, because he wants to enjoy the senses. And the only way he can do it is that if he thinks that he's the body and the mind. The mind is the, you know, instrument or substratum for enjoying the senses. And actually, well, Yeah, there's different opinions, but it's like, you can say it's the false ego, which is the perceiver. That of course, there has to be the conscious observer. But he's affected by the false ego. That's like right next to the soul. That's the first covering that Brahma puts on the soul, is the ahankara. So now he's already thinking, I'm something I'm not. And that's the beginning of it. So he has a desire to enjoy it, but because he thinks that I'm this, then he thinks, you know, I'm a human being, therefore I should enjoy the human senses. He's conditioned. The soul itself, according to Tattva, and you know, I mean, come on, you're all engineers, right? So he's unaffected, because the soul is divine. But the thing is, the soul has consciousness, which is kind of his energy, or his eternal characteristic. So that consciousness becomes contaminated, and it's being filtered through the false ego and the mind and so forth. So, you know, you have a light bulb, you put a red, you know, plastic on it, and then the light looks red. But actually the light is white. Now the light and the light bulb are somewhat different, but they're definitely strongly interrelated. Just like the sun and the sunshine, or the consciousness and the jiva. So, you know, then it filters through these, you know, red or whatever you want to call it, red film of the false ego, which Brahma covers him with, and then the consciousness becomes contaminated. And then he also wants that, to misidentify like a dream. You know, when you wake up in the morning and, you know, you had this dream and it was really nice, and then you kind of move your head back into the pillow. Yes, I want to enjoy. What was that again? You want to kind of go back into the dream, you know, like that. So the living entity wants to dream, and Krishna gives him this facility, which is a fantastic arrangement with very subtle energies. And you know, so when you want to kind of snuggle back into the dream, you can very easily do so and misidentify with that dream again.
Yeah.
A video game, yes, or a movie, something like that. I hit the car. I lost the game. You know, people go to the movies, then they start crying. And it's just some lights, you know, on the screen. Blue and red and yellow lights. And the people watch it, and they start laughing and crying. Right? Now, the tears are real. Right? But the thing, the cause of it, the tears, is not real. Because it's just some lights on the screen. But he's misidentifying, he's eagerly misidentifying with the characters shown in the movie, and thus he's feeling these emotions in his mind, and then tears come. And the tears are real. So, you know, it's just like when you have a dream that a tiger is chasing you, and you wake up, and your body's perspiring, and you're breathing, your heart's going fast, right? So, you know, all of the medical factors are real, right? Your heart's pumping, you're perspiring, and you're breathing fast. This can be documented, you know, empirically by a physician. But the cause of the whole thing is just a dream, which is not real. So the unreal becomes real due to the desire to misidentify and enjoy and dream in that dream, that, you know, false illusion. And that's what connects the false world to the real world. Is that the jiva has this desire to dream, wants to be in an illusion, apart from Krishna. That's the whole thing is about. That's why, see, this is a lot more complicated than just talking about the soul and the body. Because you got all these psychological, you know, configurations and factors which you have to consider. That's why it's called the Purusha now, not just the Kshatragya. Because now he wants to be the enjoyer. Right? What's that?
What is the relation between Prakriti and Purusha? Purusha is predominating, then what is the relation between the Devas, Prakriti or Devas? They are also mentioned Purusha. Prakriti is predominating over the Purusha. So please.
Well, let's finish this section and then you can find it. Okay, so here's the Mahavakya of the last six chapters. Purusha prakriti stohi bhunte prakriti jangunan karanam guna sangasya sadasad yoni janmasu. The living entity in material nature thus follows the ways of life, enjoying the three modes of nature. This is due to his association with that material nature. Thus he meets with good and evil amongst various species. So one might ask, where does he enjoy Purusha Sukha Dukkha Anam Bhokvitve? Right? So where does that Purusha enjoy? Right? Prakriti Jan. Prakriti Stohi. He's stuck in the Prakriti. So he's trying to enjoy the modes of nature, prakriti jan, mukti prakriti jan kunam. Those things which are born from the prakriti, he's interested in. So he comes to the prakriti, and the prakriti is made of gunas. So therefore, he's associating with those gunas. Karanam gunasangasya, and due to that gunasanga, then he has to take so many different births in this material world. So, Bhunkte Prakriti Janganam, see, he's enjoying, so the Lord is expecting this question, where does he enjoy? So then he gives the answer, Sarasad Yoni Janmasu. Satishu, Asatishu, Yoni Janmasu. In the higher consciousness of the, like the devas or the sadhus, that's the satishu or asat, and the asat is the lower consciousness creatures like animals and birds and insects and so forth. Prabhupada writes, this verse is very important for an understanding of how the living entities transmigrate from one body to another. It is explained in the second chapter that the living entity is transmigrating from one body to another just as one changes dress. This change of dress is due to his attachment to material existence. As long as he is captivated by this false manifestation, he has to continue transmigrating from one body to another. Due to his desire to lord it over material nature, he is put into such undesirable circumstances. How he is put into such different bodies is explained here. It is due to association with the different modes of nature. Then he describes at the end, the living entity, if he submits to the hearing process of Krishna consciousness, he will lose his long-cherished desire to dominate material nature. So that's all he has to do, is submit to the hearing process. But it's a long-cherished desire to dominate. So he thinks he's the dominator of the prakriti. But factually, the prakriti is dominating him, at least in his bahir-mukh-bada form. When he's bound, it means he's bound by prakriti. Right? And the funny thing is that the prakriti makes him think that he is the dominator of the prakriti. But factually, the prakriti is dominating him. So, I wanted you to discuss amongst yourselves, share some experience, you know, think of when you were young and enjoying, how the enjoying mentality once got you into trouble. And then you can understand this philosophy, how it's very practical. Just think of once how the enjoying mentality got you into trouble. And share that amongst yourselves for about 5 minutes. Think about it. Think about your enjoying this material world. You can close your eyes. Let your whole lifetime flash before you. Groups of, you know, 3, 4, or 5. It's okay. Anya cha. Okay. So then what happened? What's the Leela?
Especially in the time of Diwali.
Diwali. Into the window. Wow.
My friend, all the time he was once holding this one, cracker in the mouth.
Cracker in the mouth.
Unburnt.
Huh?
Unburnt.
Unburnt.
So he was trying to do like that.
blow it. Oh, like make believe it was a cigarette. It really, it exploded. Really? Wow. His teeth started flying, right? Oh, wow. But how did it blow up? There was no fire. Oh, there was some spark.
Yeah, I was just showing like that. You know, that just like there's some fire is there in front, and just you are showing like that.
Sometimes it doesn't work. Half of one. That is really stupid. He deserved that one. He was asking for it. Anyone else? Maybe one more.
We are going with two in vacation. Same group.
Okay. Same group. The enjoying brothers.
We used to go in vacation, Diwali or summer vacation, summer vacation, not even. So we used to go for swimming. Long way we had to walk. 4 or 5 minutes. And when we were just coming out of the field, the farmer caught us. And then they were 3 or 4 actually.
3 or 4 farmers?
Yeah. And we were like small boys. And they started threatening us. They said that because you have stolen the thing, now as a punishment you have to eat all these things. Right now in front of us. Eating beetroot is a very...
Kacha beetroot.
We thought it will be right. After eating one or two, it was really, the throat becomes so choked.
Oh, right.
Nothing was going inside.
Because it's very, it's so sweet, it's like burning, right?
Yeah, and it has afterwards some other taste that makes your throat dry.
Dry, yeah.
And it was like a horrible experience, and no one could eat more than what he.
Okay. Good. Thank you. Okay, let's go to the next verse. Now Krishna explains the real Purusha.
Upadrashtanamantacha bhatta bhukta maheshranaha paramatmeti chapyukto dehismin purusha paraha.
Yet in his body there is another, a transcendental enjoyer, who is the Lord, the supreme proprietor, who exists as the overseer and permitter, and who is known as the Supersoul. So this verse describes the relationship between the soul and the Supersoul, that both are kshatragya. The Supersoul sanctions so that the jiva may try to fulfill his desires as a Purusha, but it's just an act on the behalf of the living entity. So here it says that upadrashta, that he is the witness, and upa means close, nearby. So he's nearby, but he's also separate. So the first word is upa, means close, but the last word, para, indicates that he's separate, because para not only does it mean superior, like in Paramatma, but it also means another, like in Parakiya. Krishna belongs to another, or the lover belongs to another, something like this, Parakiya, Paramor, right? I mean, there's another lover. Amor means love, and para means another love. Right? Parakiya means another. That the Lord belongs to another, and He's not mine. So para means that He's another. So He's near, but He's separate. He's also the anumantacha, that while residing close to the jiva, He is anugrahaka. In other words, He's kind, and He's facilitating the jiva. He's the permitter, anumanta. Bharta Bhokta Maheshwara. So that means He's the actual Bhokta. He's the real enjoyer and maintainer and Supreme Lord. So we're just imitating Him, right? As Bhunkte Prakriti Jangana Bhoktritve Hetar Uchite, right? We're trying to be the Bhokta. You know, the little fish trying to be the big fish in the classic example. And if we just cooperate with Him, then we can enjoy according to our own status, our factual position. But we imitate Him, thinking that that's the way to enjoy. For Him, it's the way, but not for us. So we can't imitate Him, but rather just try to cooperate. So that is Paramatma. Paramatmeti chap yukto. It is said that He is the Paramatma, and He is also there in the body, dehe smin, and He is the Purusha Paraha, the superior or the real enjoyer, the real Purusha. Let's see what Prabhupada says here. Here's one of these kind of commentaries which you can make into a pamphlet. And I guarantee you'll make devotees if you do this. This one is very special. But first, before I read the second half of the paragraph, the second half of the purport, that's what I'm speaking about. But there's a little bit here in the first paragraph too. And because the Paramatma is the Supreme Lord, He is present within to sanction the individual soul's desiring material enjoyment. Without the sanction of the Supreme Soul, the individual soul cannot do anything. So that is the Anumanta. Now here comes this very deep commentary, which can, because it's coming from pure devotee, it can actually change the heart of the living entity. The fact is that every individual living entity is eternally part and parcel of the Supreme Lord, and both of them are very intimately related as friends. But the living entity has a tendency to reject the sanction of the Supreme Lord and act independently in an attempt to dominate nature. And because he has this tendency, he is called the marginal energy of the Supreme Lord. The living entity can be situated either in the material energy or in the spiritual energy. As long as he is conditioned by the material energy, the Supreme Lord, as his friend, the Supersoul, stays with him just to get him to return to the spiritual energy. The Lord is always eager to take him back to the spiritual energy, but due to his minute independence, the individual entity is continually rejecting the association of spiritual light. This misuse of independence is the cause of his material strife in the conditioned nature. The Lord, therefore, is always giving instruction from within and from without. From within He gives instructions as stated in Bhagavad Gita. And from without He gives instructions as stated in Bhagavad Gita. And from within He tries to convince the living entity that his activities in the material field are not conducive to real happiness. Just give it up and turn your faith toward me, then you will be happy, he says. Thus, the intelligent person who places his faith in the Paramatma, or the Supreme Personality of Godhead, begins to advance toward a blissful, eternal life of knowledge. So Prabhupada's only motive is just out of compassion to try to help living entities. So his commentary is so clear. And you get a very clear, graphic understanding of what's being said, you know, without any lofty terminology and without any kind of scholastic presentation. You know what I mean? It's just so clear. So this kind of writing, this kind of writing and preaching is very effective. And you can see that he has like no motive other than just helping the people who's reading, anyone who reads this, to turn and surrender to the Lord. So there's another Purusha. Okay, so now texts 24, 25, and 26 mention the results of understanding this knowledge. The next three verses. Ya evam vitti purusham prakritim cha gunai saha sarvata vartamano pi nasabhuya vichayate. If one who understands this philosophy concerning material nature, the living entity, and the interaction of the modes of material nature, is sure to attain liberation. He will not take birth here again, regardless of his present position. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur comments that although empowered by sleep and disturbance of mind, those who know the Paramatma, Prakriti, and Jiva Shakti do not take birth again. So he says Jiva Shakti is implied by the word cha here. But Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur generally, he's overpowered by sleep. Did I say empowered by sleep? I hope not. Although overpowered by sleep and disturbances of mind, those who know the Paramatma, Prakriti, and the Jiva, then they do not take birth again. Nasabhuya bijayate. So although one's in the body, he becomes liberated. Iha yasya harya dasya karmana manasa gira. Jiva muktas uchite. So the living entity can attain that liberated state while in the body. Sarvata vartamanopi. Although he's situated in all ways here in the material energy, he understands this philosophy clearly, and he's liberated. So that's the results of real knowledge. So one might ask, are there any other ways of attaining this stage of liberation? And expecting this, the Lord gives the answer in the next verse.
Jnaninatmani pasyanti kechit atmanam atmana anye sankena yogena karma yogena chapare.
Some perceive the Supersoul within themselves through meditation, others through the cultivation of knowledge, and still others through working without furtive desires. So you have three things here, jnanena, sankhyena yogena, and karma yogena. So Prabhupada translated these three things. One through meditation, another through cultivation of knowledge, and still others through karma yoga. And he writes in the commentary also, he says that, you know, there's the conditioned souls can be seen as those who are atheists and so forth, and others who are faithful. And they are called three kinds: introspective devotees, two, philosophers, and three, workers, who have renounced the fruit of results. So the first one he calls devotees, introspective devotees, right? So this is what is being referred to as jnanena. No, not Ashtanga Yoga. Because they're meditating on the Bhagavan in their heart. So, although it's translated kind of broadly in the translation, but in the commentary, he calls them introspective devotees. And Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur also describes that these persons are meditating on Bhagavan. So they're actually devotees, bhakti yogis. And he says that that is the only way really to perceive the Supersoul. Bhaktyaham ekaya graya. One can perceive me only by bhakti, the Lord says in the Bhagavatam, in the 11th canto. And the other ones, the other yogas are not direct causes of getting darshan of the Paramatma, because the Paramatma is gunatit, and karma yoga and jnana yoga are not gunatit, but they're of sattva gun processes. So they're kind of links, or like whatever, stepping stones, because they're in the mode of goodness. But here, Prabhupada follows Bhaktivinoda Thakur's commentary, and he's like, gives them a little credit as faithful persons. They're not atheists or skeptics or agnostics, etc. But they're, you know, transcendentalists. They're faithful. They're considered faithful. And Prabhupada describes them in his commentary. He says that, in other words, only the devotees of the Lord are best situated in spiritual understanding, because they understand that beyond this material nature are the spiritual world and the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is expanded as the Paramatma, a Supersoul. Okay, so that's the first one, the devotees. Second, of course, there are those who try to understand the Supreme Absolute Truth by cultivation of knowledge, and they can be counted in the class of the faithful. And he describes that the how they study Sankhya philosophy. And they analyze the material world as in 24 elements, as was done in verse 6 and 7, or verse 6 particularly. And they understand the 25th item to be the soul, and the 26th to be the super soul. Thus they gradually come to the standard of devotional service in Krishna consciousness. Right? So that's a kind of optimistic and very kind approach describing the jnanis, right? then those who work without fruitive results are also perfect in their attitude. They're also faithful. They are given a chance to advance to the platform of devotional service in Krishna consciousness. Right? They get a chance to advance. So now Jnanina. Here it is stated that there are some people who are pure in consciousness and who try to find out the Supersoul by meditation. And when they discover the Supersoul within themselves, they become transcendentally situated. And then it gives a little kick to the Ashtanga yogis at the end. And there's others who understand by knowledge and others by Hatha Yoga who try to satisfy the Lord by childish activities. So he kind of adds the, you know, Hatha yogis at the end. But he doesn't include them in the translation or in the beginning of the commentary. But considering that maybe someone may count them as yogina, sankhyena and yogina. Yeah.
I thought that they are coming under the category of philosophers.
Which sentence? Those who are...
Sixth sentence, number one. Fourth sentence, number
one. I'm sorry, where is it?
Sixth sentence, number one.
Sixth sentence.
Last second. Those who always said the bottom of the doctrine of monism. This side, what was page?
First page.
Seventh line.
After the three kinds of devotees. All right. Those who always try to establish the doctrine of monism are also counted amongst atheists and agnostics. Right. Yes. Yeah, of course, if they're impersonalists, then they're to be rejected. But if they're just cultivating knowledge, then that's kind of innocent, more innocent. In other words, Sankhya Yoga is actually given by Kapila. It's in the Bhagavatam. It's, you know, I mean, the gopis rejected it, but, you know, that's at a quite a high level. I know, and Uddhava told them that they should do Sankhya Yoga. So the Sankhya Yoga can be, you know, implemented. It can be used. If it's not abused, then, you know, it's all right. Kapila Dev is presenting this ideas, Sankhya. Because that means they're averse to the Lord. Whereas the Sankhyites are trying to find the Lord through the Sankhya process. Malati Vidyabhushan says the Sankhyites have philosophy as their primary means and meditation as secondary. And that the Nishkam Karma Yogis may seek knowledge philosophically or meditate, but their primary means is to understand the indwelling Lord by working with detachment. Now, if one cannot do jhana, sankhya, or karma yoga, what can he do? Now it's described in the next verse.
Anyi trevam jānantah śrutvāni dya upāsati tepi chācityaranteva mrityum śruti parāyana.
So these are the śruti parāyanas, or anyecha. There are others. Prabhupada says this means the general public.
Vishwanatha Chakravarti says, those who hear Bhagavad Katha here and there at different places, and they hear with faith, and they follow what they hear. So this is very nice for common people, right? Baladeva Bhusan mentions that they don't know these three paths, but they like to hear from the proper source. And because of good association and following what is heard, they progress. They hear with faith and without material desires. But this doesn't mention. It says they hear from the proper source. That means, from Vaishnavas, not from cheaters or just professional reciters. Prabhupada says this verse is particularly applicable to modern society, because most people, they don't study, Sankhya or philosophy or any philosophy. And they don't practice yoga, or they can't meditate because their minds are too disturbed. But they go to different places and they hear from sadhus and they hear about the Lord from the proper places. And they get good association, so they follow what they hear. And so gradually they progress. And Prabhupada mentions Lord Chaitanya, that the hearing process is very important. And Lord Chaitanya, who preached in the modern world, gave great stress to hearing. Because if the common man simply hears, he can progress. Especially if he hears Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama. So Mahaprabhu, that's all he did. He just did kirtan and distributed prasadam to people, basically. And there wasn't much philosophy, for the common mass, for the masses. The preaching was done only to, like, Prakashananda Saraswati, or to, the Karmavadis, in the South India. The Tattvavadis, the Buddhists. Keshava Kashmiri, we didn't preach to him, we just told him, about poetry. His mistakes about poetry. he preached to the astute philosophers, intelligent classes of people. Mainly those who were already in some process. Tattvavadis, Mayavadis, Buddhists, etc. But common people, he would just have Bikirtan. Because that in itself gave them strong faith. And Prabhupada also, he noticed that students in France, they were too aggressive. And they asked, why are you sitting on such a big chair? that was the kind of questions that he got at the end of the class. You think you're better than everybody else? So Prabhupada said, these people, we cannot preach to them, just do kirtan. And when he went to Africa, he said the same thing. He said, mainly for them, we just do kirtan and just disturb prasadam. But for the mass of people, French people are considered kind of elevated, at least socially, but they're not much different from African people. Because although they're sophisticated, they're just too envious, really, to appreciate. They're not pious enough. And the African people are just too simple. Even the brahmacharis, one brahmachari in the ashram stole Prabhupada's cloth. and Prabhupada said, hey, where's my clothes? Brahmananda. And he said, okay. And then Prabhupada gave the class, he saw a brahmachari wearing his cloth and sitting in the class. And then Prabhupada called him, he's wearing my clothes. He You tell him to give them back. No. And then I think the next day they did the same thing happen again. So for common people, first they just do kirtan and take prasadam, because gradually they get purified. And those who have the inclination, they'll gravitate to the books, because the books are there. Right? The books are always there. So people who have the inclination, when they're purified, when they're ready, then they'll pick up the books, they'll start to study. And then they'll ask questions, and then gradually they'll learn more if they take up the process. So Prabhupada said, if one is fortunate enough to take shelter of pure devotee, hear from him about self-realization and follow in his footsteps, one will be gradually elevated to the position of a pure devotee. In this verse particularly, the process of hearing is strongly recommended, the Shruti Parayana. And this is very appropriate. Although the common man is often not as capable as so-called philosophers, faithful hearing from an authoritative person will help one transcend the material existence and go back to Godhead. And there's a lot of people in India like this also. The simple ladies and village people and they hear from Ramayana and Mahabharata maybe at night a little bit. And they go to some Bhagavad Saptaha. That's why so many people come, right, to Bhagavad Saptaha. Because they know that, they can just sit there for a few hours and get the kind of churned essence from the sadhu and, have a nice time, relax. They don't have to, study what is karya and karana and kartradvaya and how prakriti and purusha are interrelated. All these things, give you a headache. Yes, Hare Krishna. More simple. And we have to study it because we're supposed to be preachers, and we want to be, there's going to be people who are going to ask questions about all these things. At least a few people. Most people, they won't ask. Most people, they won't even notice this verse is in the Gita in the 13th chapter. Right? You ask them, who is Shruti Parayana? I never heard of that. Right? So they can also transcend the path of birth and death. Okay, so now one might ask, what is the cause of birth and death? And that's answered in the next verse, which is going into the last section. So this last section is called Jnana Chakshusha, the vision of knowledge. 27 to 35. And this will be quicker. There was not so much commentary. And these verses are kind of flowing more quickly. Yes? Right.
So which is the path before that? Is there any path?
The other... Well, there was one who knows this... If you understand this philosophy... You'll get liberation. That's very high. So then it's, well, there's any other way? Yeah, those who do jnana, sankhya, and karma yoga. All right. That's good. There's other paths. And if someone can't do those, anyecha, there's this other common people, the Shruti Parayana. They can also, that's more gradual. And for the common people. And it also works. It's considered, it's jnana. But this is, he particularly mentioned Sankhya Yoga. But this, this is, you could say it's, you could, the high point of Sankhya Yoga is, what is this? This is like the churned cream of Sankhya Yoga. When you get to the 25th item, usually Sankhya Yoga just means the 24 items. But those who come to the, you know, the end of that, then they come to the soul and then the super soul. And they understand that the 24 items is just prakriti. So then they, that's real knowledge. Not, then you're going further. It's like atma-tattva, paramatma-tattva. Okay, next section. Okay, so Krishna said that those who hear, they can also transcend the path of birth and death. Right? And is it mrityum atitaranti? So they can taranti or atitaranti mrityum, birth, the path of birth and death. So what is the cause of birth and death? Huh? Why are you laughing? Link. I didn't see, no. Dhyana, he says, Ashtanga. Yeah. And you can see how Prabhupada translates, and then he explains it in the commentaries. Talk about devotees, yeah. Because he's doing dhyana. Dhyana can mean to meditate on Bhagavan, too. Well, we'll see. I won't say right now. Generally, it's talking about Gyan Mishra Bhakti, Pradhani Bhuti Bhakti. It's mixed. Okay, let's do it.
Yavat sanjayate kinchit satvam stavara jangamam kshatra kshatragya samyogat tadvidhi paratarshava.
O chief of the Bharatas, know that whatever you see in existence, both the moving and the non-moving, is only a combination of the field of activities and the knower of the field. So yavat here means either low or high. Whatever kind of existence, right? Sattva here is existence. So whether, and stavara jangama is stationary or moving. The living beings, sattvam here means living beings or existence, right? So they're kshatra, kshatragya, samyogat. They're just a combination of the body and the soul. Which the kshatriya includes the super soul too. So you should understand that. That's pretty basic, right? Everything in this world is a combination of kshatriya and kshatriya. So when the kshatriya connects with the body, with the kshatriya, then that's called birth. And when the kshatriya departs from the kshatriya, that's called death. That's like a definition of birth and death, you know. Pretty simple. So this union of Prakriti and Purusha is from time immemorial, but now how to separate them is explained from here to the end of the chapter. The union of the Prakriti and Purusha have been going on since Anadi, right, time immemorial. But now, how to separate them? He's been Prakriti Stohi for a long time. So now, how to separate them? Through knowledge. Through jnana.
samam sarveshu bhuteshu tishtantam parameshwaram vinashyat sa vinashyantam yapashyati sapashyati.
One who sees the super soul accompanying the individual soul in all bodies, and who understands that neither the soul nor the super soul within the destructible bodies ever destroyed actually sees. So this is someone who is really, you know, tattva-gyani. And he sees equally all different bodies, because he sees the soul and super soul present. So he's like in chapter 5, it's described that this vidyavanaya sampani. Person has knowledge, he's gentle. So he's pandita samadarshina. Sees the little creatures equally. Prabhupada said, just as there are so many earthen dolls and pots, so any sane man knows that these are all made of earth. That's all. This is from his lecture again. That vision is wanted. But these rascals are thinking, I'm American, I'm Indian, I'm Brahmin, I'm fat. Therefore, they're all imperfect. They're thinking they're the body. But here, we see that the super soul, one who sees the super soul and the soul in the body, and he sees that the soul and the super soul are indestructible, but the body is destructible, then he actually can see properly. And that is real, you know, vision based on knowledge. In the commentary it says, and they think that when the body is destroyed, everything is finished. And Prabhupada said so many times in lectures about this, Professor Kartofsky in Moscow, biggest professor in Moscow, so intelligent, knew Sanskrit, everything. But he said that when the body is finished, everything's finished. So in California, there was an institute, highly respected institute, where they were testing and training gorillas. I forget the name of the institute right now. And they had one gorilla that was there called Coco the gorilla. And they trained her how to, like, make hand signals, a very simple language, so they could actually communicate with her. You know, how are you? She would say, yes, I'm good. What kind of food do you like now? Give me this. You know, she could actually communicate with the scientists who were, you know, they thought it was interesting. So then they asked her some philosophical questions. And I asked her, you know, I asked her, I forget how it goes, but, you know, what happens Yes, it's some different questions, but the last question was like, what happens when a gorilla gets old? Oh, yeah, okay, that's one of the questions. When the gorilla gets old, and she made some signal like tired and sick. And then they asked, what happens when the gorilla dies? And then she made a sign like, they put in a hole in the ground. That's it. So that's gorilla philosophy. Kartofsky's got the same philosophy as Coco the gorilla. when the gorilla's old, when dies, they put it in the ground and it's finished. That's it. There's no soul, there's no afterlife. So people who think like that, and they're like animals, actually. The same philosophy. But someone who is pandita samadarshina, he understands that he sees the unifying feature of all beings is the Brahman, is the Atma and Paramatma, and he sees them equal everywhere. Samam sarvasya bhuteshu tishtantam parameshwaram, sees that the Supreme Lord is there in the heart along with the spirit soul. So what's the benefit of this vision? It's given in the next verse, the benefit.
Samam pasyan hi sarvatra samavastitam ishvaram nahi nasyatmanatmanam tato yati param gatim.
For one who sees the super soul equally present everywhere in every living being does not degrade himself by his mind. Thus he approaches the transcendental destination. So this is an interesting verse. Because if you see the super soul everywhere, then nahinasti, that you don't destroy yourself or you don't degrade yourself, atmana, by the mind. But you attain the paramgatin. So those who are not aware of God everywhere, then their mind becomes degraded. Because then there's no vishaya other than the senses and the sense objects. The sense objects replace the Ishvara as the vishaya or the object of thought. Because there always has to be some target for the mental energy, which is called vishaya or the object. Right? So the mind, if the mind's not thinking of God, the mind's going to be thinking of sense objects, which is becomes the vishaya. Or someone who thinks of that all the time is called vishayi, right? He's a sense enjoyer. Because he makes the sense objects his vishaya, his object of meditation. But the Supreme Lord is the real vishaya. So Prabhupada said, he does not degrade himself by a destructive mentality, and he gradually advances to the spiritual world. The mind is generally addicted to sense-gratifying processes, but when the mind turns to the super soul, one becomes advanced in spiritual understanding. Just like, you know, it's like when you're in the temple room, generally you notice that your mind behaves itself, right? Because you realize you're in front of the Lord, the devotees are there, it's kind of formal, and you feel respect, that you feel the presence of God. But so if you're thinking, if you're like that all the time, it's like being in the temple room all the time. If you realize that God is in your heart, then you won't allow the mind to wander to the sense objects and to contemplate so many evil things. Because you'll be more, I don't know, careful. Because God's there. And when we allow our mind to go like that, it means we're forgetting that He's in our heart. And then later when we remember, we may feel embarrassed. Oh, I was thinking of all these things, and actually the Lord must be aware of these things. So, I wrote that my note here, that one should not be disturbed or envious, but understand the super soul is acting, guiding, and sanctioning. Such a person has discrimination and doesn't constantly blame others for his faults. You know, my parents, you know, the temple president, or my wife, it's all her fault. So someone might ask, please further describe this vision. How should one see and act? So this is explained further now. And it further explains verse 21. How should one see and act? And this further describes verse 21. purushah sukadukkhanam. And that hetu prakriti uchate. And the material energy is the cause of the instrument of the cause and effect, and the living entity is the cause of the suffering and enjoyment.
Prakritya cha karmani kriyamanani sarvashah yapashyati tatatmanam akartaram sapashyati.
One who can see that all activities are performed by the body, which is created of material nature, and sees that the self does nothing, actually sees. In other words, I cause different suffering and enjoyments, but I do nothing. The prakriti is acting. But somehow I'm the cause because I'm deciding, I'm desiring and I'm making decision. But then everything's just carried out by the material nature. So Prabhupada explains that the body is made by material nature under the direction of the super soul, and whatever activities are going on in respect to one's body are not his doing. Whatever one is supposed to do, either for happiness or distress, one is forced to do because of the bodily constitution. The self, however, is outside of all these bodily activities. This body is given according to one's past desires. To fulfill desires, one is given the body, with which he acts accordingly. Practically speaking, the body is a machine designed by God to fulfill desires. Because of desires, one is put into material circumstances to suffer or enjoy. This transcendental vision of the living entity, when developed, makes one separate from bodily activities. One who has such a vision is an actual seer. Right, so I'm just swimming in the pool of prakriti. And all these waves are coming because before I made some movement, and now all these things are coming back to me and being tossed. So the idea is to stop trying to enjoy the sense objects, which, you know, you're moving, you're in the water, and then you're causing all of these ripples, and then they come back later, and you're being tossed by those in the pool. When one makes Krishna the Vishaya, then all of that stops. And then one just waits while he's in the prakriti. He stops trying to bhunkte prakriti janguna. So now, therefore there's no more guna sangha. And he doesn't have to take birth anymore. Because he gives up the cause, which is bhunkte prakriti janguna. And he can do that if he just redirects his attention towards Krishna as the Vishaya. That's the whole thing. We give up the enjoying spirit, then we become liberated. We're just waiting out our time in this material prakriti, this big pool. Because there's no more interaction of these things, and we become free from the modes of nature. Yeah, we'll come to that at the end more. We talk about the three gates to hell. Yeah, we have to give up all the anarthas, yeah. The main thing is enjoying kama. That's why it comes first in the list. The rest are just, you know, incarnations of kama. Kamadev manifestations. 31. Yada bhuta prithak bhavam ekastam anupashyati tata eva cha vistaram brahma sampadyate tada. When a sensible man ceases to see different identities, prithak bhavam, due to different material bodies, and he sees how beings are expanded everywhere, ekastam, then he attains the Brahman conception. So he stops seeing separately everyone, but he's seen them as one. So, I mean, all the bodies, gradually will return to Prakriti, as in the Christian world they say, from ashes to ashes and dust to dust. You know, the material bodies will all merge together back in the Prakriti and become one. But now they're manifest differently in different sizes, different shapes and colors. So it seems that they're different. But although they seem different, the bodies themselves, they'll return to Prakriti at the time of dissolution. But the living entity inside is not subject. There's always that oneness there between the super soul is the same, and although the individual souls are not exactly the same, but they're similar. They all have the same nature. Right? So there's a oneness that can be seen. So then how he sees will be explained in the next verse. Prabhupada writes. He was talking about this Brahman conception. Living beings are in these different bodies, which all seem different. Anadidvanni gunatvat paramatmaya avyayaha shariroshto pikonteya nakaroti na lipyate. Those with the vision of eternity can see that the imperishable soul is transcendental, eternal, and beyond the modes of nature. Despite contact with the material body, O Arjuna, the soul neither does anything nor is entangled. So although in the body, na karoti, he doesn't do anything, and na lipyate, is not entangled. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's gloss on this verse is that it refers to the super soul, which he, in Baladeva Vidyabhushan, says the jiva. So there's some difference there. So Prabhupada sides with Baladeva Vidyabhushan. He says, the living entity appears to be born because of the birth of the material body, but actually the living entity is eternal. He is not born. He cannot be destroyed. He does not engage himself in any material activities, therefore, the activities performed due to his contact with the material bodies do not entangle him. When if he sees that he's separate, then naturally there's not going to be any attachment to the activities that's being done by the body. And attachment is the form or the cause of bondage. So when he's knowing that he's separate, then it's not going to be this, you know, fever to enjoy the senses of the body. So then he's just acting in the body and kind of waiting for it to just dissolve. Go back to the Prakriti. Bhaktivinoda Thakur comments, when the jivas attain Brahman realization, they can understand that the super soul is avyaya, anadi, and nirguna. Although he's in the body, right, the Paramatma, with the jiva, he doesn't become implicated in the qualities of the body, or the gunas of the body, like the bhata jivas. So the jivas who have attained the Brahman stage no longer become implicated in material affairs, because they take shelter of this knowledge. So it appears that he's also describing this too, but saying that the living entity, by attaining Brahma-Bhuta, he can attain the same state of being, you know, well, he's also anadi and nirgun when he comes to the Brahma-Bhuta stage. And he's also avirya. That's why, you know, it could be, the verse can be describing the super soul or the jiva soul. Huh? Those qualities pertain to both. Because they're both in the body, and they both are of these natures. Anadi, nirgun, avyaya, parama. Right? But we see that the next verse is describing... Well, anyway, it could be, according to Vishnu, I think it's also described the Paramatma. Previous verse?
The beings are expanded and the Paramatma or Jiva?
Well, Prabhupada's describing it all as the jiva. But it could be seen as the Paramatma also. Because they're both Kshatragya and they're both Purusha. So the gloss can be different. I mean, the first few verses, it's obvious we're talking about the Bhada jiva. But then from, what was it, 24 or something, right? Maybe 23. What was it? Then the Paramatma was being described. Then 23. From 23, the Paramatma is being described. So, in any case, Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, now hear how such jiva deals with the body. In his commentary, speaking as if Krishna. And the question is given, if both the living entity and Supersoul are in the body, then how is it that they do not become bound to the nature of the body? So both of them can become transcendental to the nature of the body in the following way.
Yata sarvagatam saukshmyat akasham no palipyate sarvatra vastito dehe tatatma no palipyate.
The sky, due to its subtle nature, does not mix with anything, although it is all pervading. Similarly, the soul, situated in Brahman vision, does not mix with the body, though situated in that body. So Vishwanath here comments, the Brahma-Bhuta Atma, who follows the path of the Supersoul, does not become influenced by the qualities and defects related to the body, although residing within that body. So here he's saying that this is obviously the jiva. But it would seem that comment is applicable to the previous verse too. The jiva, when the Brahma-Bhuta jiva, right, when that Atma comes to the Brahma-Bhuta stage, then he's just like the Supersoul. Then there's, qualitatively, there's no difference. Because he's not trying to enjoy, he has knowledge, he's liberated. And then therefore, Nakaroti doesn't do anything, just living in the body like the Supersoul. That's the state that we want to attain. And it can be achieved, and the qualities are the same. And Krishna gives another example. And I forget, I didn't write down, but there's a connection here also that... Okay, the soul is not I think you understand the example anyway, that the sky is everywhere in mud, in this and that, so many things, but it doesn't mix with that. It always remains separate. So the soul, although in the body, it doesn't mix and become bound by the body because it's actually separate. At least when he's in the Brahma-Bhuta platform, he doesn't want to, there's that desire for illusion is gone. That desire to misidentify is gone. The false ego is gone. And so, therefore, there's this detachment. Because that was the only thing which was binding him, right? Making it seem as if he was affected. Then that's no longer there. That bind is cut through knowledge and detachment. And through no more desire for enjoying. He doesn't want to lord it over the material nature now, so then there's no real purpose for a material body. The material body is only for lording over the material nature. So he's just waiting out his time, like the super soul in the body. Let's just finish, and then you can ask questions, because there's only two more verses here.
Yata prakashyatyeka krishnam lokam imam ravihi kshatram kshatri tata krishnam prakashayati bharata.
O son of Bharat, as the sun alone illuminates all this universe, so does the living entity, one within the body, illuminate the entire body by consciousness.
So Vishnu's gloss again here, the kshatri is the super soul. But Prabhupada follows Baladevi Vidvushan's tika, which is the Atma, talking about the Atma.
But in either way, it's, at this point, when the Atma is Brahma Bhuta Atma, then there's not much difference. Then both the qualities are the same. Anyway, there's consciousness in the body, and there's, you know, the person who's renting the apartment, the tenant is there and he's aware. And then the landlord is also aware of the things. But the consciousness of the body is, it's to be considered the consciousness of the jiva. Because we're the ones that are involved with the body more than the super soul. Super soul is not feeling our itches and our pains and pleasures like this. So, one in the body, but we're illuminating the entire body with consciousness. And that is, we're in the heart, and the consciousness is somehow like going throughout the body, like through the blood system. Like, you know, if you fall asleep on your hand, and then you wake up, and there's no blood in the hand. You can't feel anything until the blood goes back into the hand. Right? You have that experience? Then you have to kind of go... Or your leg, right? You can't even walk because you can't feel anything. So the consciousness is there, and it's being spread in the body. But in this case, not affected by the body. And the example is like, you may ask that, how can the illuminator not be affected by that which it illuminates? Like if you go at night with a flashlight, with a torch out here in the ashram, and you flash it on this building, right? You're illuminating the building with your flashlight. So, is the flashlight going to be affected by the brick wall which it is illuminating? No. There's no effect. Because it's just a projection of light. Similarly, the jiva, who's not falsely misidentifying with the body and trying to enjoy, then it means he's in the body and the consciousness is spread throughout the body, but he's unaffected by it, just like the flashlight shining against the wall. It's only because he wants to enjoy illusion, then he may identify with the wall. if it's something beautiful wall, right? Something like that. Okay, last verse.
Kshatra kshatra gyayurevam antaram jnana chakshusha bhuta prakriti moksham cha ye vidurianti te param.
Those who see with eyes of knowledge the difference between the body and the knower of the body, and can also understand the process of liberation from bondage in material nature, attain to the supreme goal. So here's a one verse summary of the chapter. Krishna uses the word kshatra and kshatragya again. And antaram, one who sees the difference through jnana chakshusha, right, by knowledge of the scripture. And he can also understand bhuta prakriti moksham cha, that there's some process of liberation. Now that is such as jnana, given in text 25. Right? Mishnah Chakravarti says, such as dhyana in text 25. Krishna also said there's a good process, thinking about God. Then that person who knows, Nyanti Te Param, he goes to the Supreme. So there's two types of kshatragyas. The jiva becomes implicated due to ignorance. So if the ignorance is dispelled with knowledge, then he becomes liberated. That's simple. Prabhupada writes, the purport of this 13th chapter is that one should know the distinction between the body, the owner of the body, and the supersoul. One should recognize the process of liberation as described in verses 8 through 12. Then one can go on to the supreme destination. So there's the general process of knowledge there, process of liberation. And then, skipping one paragraph, Prabhupada talks about the spiritual master, the faithful person who hears from the spiritual master, and gradually he, by his instructions, he gets free from this bodily concept. Now, Prabhupada says, one can understand that this body is matter. It can be analyzed with its 24 elements. The body is the gross manifestation, and the subtle manifestation is the body, the mind, and psychological effects. And the symptoms of life are the interaction of these features, the mind and psychological effects. But over and above this, there is the soul. There's also the supersoul. The soul and supersoul are two. This material world is working by the conjunction of the soul and the 24 material elements. One who can see the constitution of the whole material manifestation as this combination of soul and material elements, and can also see the situation of the supreme soul, becomes eligible for transfer to the spiritual world. These things are meant for contemplation and for realization. And one should have a complete understanding of this chapter with the help of the spiritual master. So there you have it. That is the conclusion of the chapter in a very clear way. Vishnu Chakravarti also gives his conclusion. He says, of the two kshatragyas, the jiva becomes bound when he enjoys the fruits of the kshatra. But he becomes liberated by the appearance of jnana, knowledge. This is explained in chapter 13. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur wrote, Krishna speaks of the fruits of knowledge in text 35. In chapter 13, knowledge is explained as the means for liberation for a living entity. Okay. So, you're not that body, Prabhu. That's the gist of the whole chapter. See how simple Prabhupada made everything?
you're not the body. You're not the hand. You're not the ear, the arm, the leg, the nose. That's it. One time when I was a grihastha living in London, I was I took prasadam and then I brought my plate into the kitchen and I was washing my plate. And suddenly, the most amazing thing happened to me. I became completely covered by something strange. And I was like washing the plate. And then I felt like I was totally aloof from my body. And I was just I was no longer doing anything. The hand was just moving, kind of due to the prakriti, and I was just watching it, kind of. I was no longer doing it. I was separate, and I was just watching my body wash the plate. I was thinking, wow, what's going on here? You know, I'm completely different from the body. Hare Krishna. I never felt that in my whole life. It was just for a few moments. It was this very intense realization and experience that I was totally separate and I was just watching myself do this. And I realized that I wasn't doing it. You know? And it was very, almost frightening, but it was like nectar. Because I was thinking, wow, if I could be like this all the time, then it would be really far out, you know. And I would just kind of be floating around and, you know. But then, of course, after a few minutes, I went back to my usual bodily consciousness, you know. But for a moment, somehow, I didn't know why or how that happened. But I just, you know, I'll think I'll never forget that my whole life. It was almost like an out-of-body experience or something. But, I didn't get in an accident or, you know, I wasn't in the hospital or something like that. I was just, Krishna just took me out from the body for a moment. Has anyone here had any kind of experience like that or something similar, maybe due to some, you know, maybe like some people when they get into an accident, they experience that kind of thing. Yes? When you were eating the beetroot. Yeah. What you fell down? Uh-huh. So you didn't feel afraid when your body was falling because you felt separate from. Yeah, I think when there's a situation where like it's very dangerous, the soul may try to detach itself from the body quickly because it knows it's gonna hit very soon. Right? Uh oh. Kind of like a security, you know. Protection function of the soul. Someone else? Anyone else? Chaitanya Charan Prabhu?
What shlokas? as I was being given a saline. And what happens, the pressure got imbalanced. So instead of the blood going inside the body, blood from the body started going into the tube. And the whole, almost half the bottle got filled. And I was hearing this 11th chapter going on. And then I could feel that, okay, this is happening to my body. Nothing is happening to me. Blood is going on, it's a wave which is there inside, it's continuing outside. And there's a flow there. Anyway, I just picked up the phone, called the nurse and did something. But I really felt that we can take the consciousness out of the body if we have something higher to absorb ourselves in. And then what happens to the body doesn't matter so much.
Right. Yeah, Daksha had his head cut off. And a goat head, but he was still offering prayers to the Lord with a goat head. And I think it was Lenin. He had a heart operation, but he was afraid of the opposition trying to take over or something. So he didn't want any anesthesia during this operation. So he just stayed awake during such a, like some heart operation. But he didn't feel any pain because his consciousness was so much absorbed in politics. Yeah. Anyone else? Ramananda? No? Okay. All right. So are there any last questions? Yes? Yes?
In the Paramatma perception, is there a higher stage? Because if you are perceiving the Paramatma, one can be freed from the disturbance of the mind. So is there a higher stage in perceiving Paramatma?
Yes, of course. There's some taste to all of these things. I mean, even the material, there's material pleasures all the way up to, I mean, there's, I don't know what they call it, I forget now the terminology, but all the way up to Brihaspati Sukha, or maybe not Sukha, Ananda, Brihaspati Ananda they call it, yeah. Devananda, Karma Devananda, Manushya Ananda, there's so many terms for different kinds of pleasure up to Brihaspati Ananda. But then above that there's Brahmananda. And there's a pleasure there, it's just that it's compared to one drop to the ocean of Bhakti Ananda or devotional pleasure. So there's, there's pleasure there. Otherwise, how are the yogis able to sit in the forest and fast and just meditate like that unless they're getting pleasure? It's a lot higher than any material pleasure, and it's a lot higher than even Brihaspati and Indra. Indrananda. Yeah, there's pleasure. Certainly there's pleasure there. Bhakti gives the highest taste. And for people who can't do Gyanananda or Paramatmananda, they can't do yoga and this. There's no ability to come to the level of absorption which is necessary to access that kind of ananda. You need very intense absorption. Otherwise, you can't obtain the dhyana and samadhi levels of yoga. I mean, we give some examples, but Lenin, or maybe Socrates, they had some. Realize I'm not the body, but there's some higher, something higher than just the common people. And then, of course, realizing Paramatma, there's more pleasure. But to get that pleasure, it's very difficult. And then there's no prema there. It's just, It's not, there's no prema or love. How is it?
Yeah, the soul is unchangeable. And various other things like understand it doesn't change, it's the same. So how is that the soul becomes like a bija and then it comes to this material world? Where the spiritual body has got hands, legs, there has a constitution, he may be a manjari, he's having a face and hands like that. So how come when he's in the body, he's in the bija form?
How come? My understanding that is that form is there, just it's unmanifest, dormant, and because you're trying to think of it as in times of physical time and space, right? You can't think of the soul in a physical form. To me, it doesn't. There's no contradiction. I don't see any contradiction between the soul as the spark in the body and the other manifestation. The other manifestation is when there's full consciousness, right? And here, there can be full consciousness too. In other words, that's what happens when you attain Sarup Siddhi and Vastu Siddhi. It's like that's there, and then you realize it. Your form is already, it's there. It's just not manifest to you. But when your consciousness is purified, and you come to this Vaidusha Pratyaksha, or Bhava, then you realize your Sarup. It means that you see yourself like that. So then, you could say that the soul is bija, but it's just that because that consciousness of that soul is covered, then there's no realization of the form. But the form is there. When the consciousness comes up to the proper level, then the form becomes manifest. So you may think of it like, you know, squeezing that sarup down into this little spark, but that is just your conception based on physical time and space. Right? So we're not saying that it's like this and then, condensing the sarup. But anyway, is that sarup this big or is it this big? Can you say? How big is that sarup? Is it like this? Is it 1/10,000 the tip of a hair? Or is it the size of your medium-sized body? Or is it the size of Mahavishnu? How big is that sarup? There's no physical form, actually. So the time and space has no meaning because there's no such kind of physical laws which are binding the soul. So it's right there. Your little, manjari sarup is right there. You know, little teeny microscopic manjari. It's right there. It's just that you haven't, realized.
We specify the soul in terms of time and space also. Like we say, at this time, soul is situated within my body, within the region of my heart.
Mm-hmm.
So, now we are giving a time, this soul is right now present.
Right.
And right now it's situated within, physically we are locating it in space, material space.
Mm-hmm.
So this is, can define it, this is the point
Yeah, but it's still like Kesha Grasha Dabhagasya Shatangsha Sharashatanka Jiva Shukshma Sarupoyam Sikyantito Chitkana. So that Chitkana is there, but it's Sankhyatito. It's above being counted or measured. So you may put your coordinates as an engineer, you know, on this, but it's Sankhyatita. It's above, you know, making a blueprint or trying to engineer it onto the scale of Newtonian physics. You can't do that. And actually that just the thing of the 1/10,000th tip of a hair, that's also just to give an idea how small it is. I mean, Prabhupada said like that to give it some scientific empirical validation so people can have faith. But the acharyas have explained that this, previous acharyas have explained that this is just, there's no actual measurement. You can't, that's what the verse also says, Sankhyatit. And also, Jiva Goswami describes that, you know, the descriptions in the Shastra that says the Paramatma is the size of the thumb, that's also just for dhyana, for conception, for meditation. Because there's no 8 inches or, you know, there's no measurement for the Atma or the Paramatma. It's Anur Aniyam Mahato Mahiyam. It's big and small. There's no size. Okay, we may say that whatever it is, it's situated in the heart. Okay, in the heart region somewhere. But it's not like locked inside of the heart organ. Because if you get a heart transplant, you're the same person. It means that not the soul. The soul's not, you know, limited to space and time. Otherwise, you when you put the soul, you know, you take out your heart and get another, you'll become a different person. And wherever they transplant that old heart, that will be you. Because you would be locked inside of the heart, right? But it doesn't work like that. The soul is just using it as a chair to sit on, but it's not confined to the heart organ, physical, the biological organ. So it's like, that's why you have to kind of expand the consciousness a little bit when you're talking about spirit. A quantum leap of philosophy has to be there in order to accept this achintya shakti. It's there for the soul also. Prashna Sagar Maharaj has another question.
Could you explain the consciousness flows through the blood?
Yeah.
Now scientists, they have this painkiller which actually makes the nerves non-functional.
You mean with anesthetics and... I have to think about that. I've had anesthetic before also. And they give some local anesthesia and sometimes in the blood. The points of contact with the nerves with the brain.
But that has a lot of side effects, which will give you much greater pain later.
Pain comes later.
There's
there's reactions to taking this anesthesia? Yeah, other than consciousness, there's also the nerve system. But I had anesthesia, and I didn't feel pain, but I could still feel that area, what was going on. You know, I had an operation in Russia where one of the doctors was a devotee. He said, "This is a very short operation, and if you take the gas, and you'll get a headache, and you know, it's take you a while, you'll be very groggy and so forth. So just stay awake, and they'll give you a local anesthesia." I said, "Okay." I didn't know. I never had any surgery before. I mean, okay, I didn't feel pain, but I was like, I could feel everything that they were doing inside me, and it was nerve-wracking. You know, I had these butterflies going up and down my whole chest and my stomach, and the nervous system was flipping out completely. Because, you know, someone cuts you and they start playing around with stuff inside of your body, and the body just flips out. You know, it's too shocking. The whole nervous system was going like this for half an hour. I was like feeling all these sensations of the nerves, right? And I was chanting, you know, Ishopanishad and different shlokas or Gita shlokas, and then the doctor said, "Oh, that's interesting. What is he chanting?" "Oh, he's chanting, you know, verses from the holy scriptures." And he said, "Yes, I feel the atmosphere here in the operating arena, which I never experienced before." He told like this. So both of us were experiencing something we never had before. But I could feel, you know. I mean, somehow the nerves cuts the pain, but the feelings are still there because the consciousness in the blood stuff. That was my experience. That comes later. Well, at least in the 18th chapter. We'll see. Yeah, that definitely, there may be before the 18th, but by the 18th you'll see. Because he goes through a whole yoga ladder thing. He summarizes the whole Gita, and there he describes it. Surrender unto him utterly. Yeah? And the commentaries, "I spoke to you in the third person as if I was speaking about someone else, but you know that I am that soul, super soul, Arjuna, in the body." This kind of commentary is there. We'll get to that, hopefully. Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada ki. Yeah.